Hello again, and welcome to yet another installation of the Nikonians podcast on location with Martin Jorgensen. Today I had actually decided that I would go outside and shoot on some outdoors location. This morning was a really beautiful spring morning. This is mid-March and the sun was shining and everything seemed very nice and calm. But as the time came closer when I decided to leave, it actually became a stormy blizzard, and right now it's snowing outside. It's cold, it's windy, and it's really terrible. So, well, I decided against going outside. Instead, I decided to follow an idea that I got from a listener a while back and pursue some coin photography. I can see from different posts on the Nikonians forum and other places that photographing coins is actually quite interesting to many people, both the ones that actually collect coins and want to document what they have, and also people who just want to take pictures of these nice shiny little gems. Also, of course, the whole concept of coin and wealth and money is a very good subject to take pictures of, and it's quite easy to do something that will give people associations that has to do with money and economy and stock exchange and you know, work and business and what have you. That could be, for instance, to illustrate business reports or something like that. So money and coins and stuff like that is absolutely an interesting subject. So that was what I decided, that I will shoot coins. As I said, it was listener feedback who got me on the track of shooting coins. John Reeder, who's also known at the Nikonian forums as Nikon Newbie, asked for macro shots, and he mentioned coins as a very interesting subject. He wrote in the feedback forum, he wrote, "I'm a coin collector, so I like to take 1-to-1 or 1.5-to-1 photographs of the coins in my collections. While I have used a Nikkor ring light, I would welcome any pointers for shooting shiny objects like coins." Well, that gave me the idea of shooting coins, and this episode will now be devoted to coin photography and other small shiny objects. There was actually a very long thread in January containing the results of the monthly challenge in the micro and macro forum on the Nikonians. The challenge was shooting coins, and there were a lot of good examples, I can tell you. And by the way, if you haven't checked out the entries for the following month's challenge, which is Splash, you're in for a real treat. The pictures are really awesome, no less. Go into the micro and macro forum, check out this challenge, and participate if you want to. But onto today's session. The subject of coins can be attacked in several ways. As John mentioned, there's the documentation part where the purpose is to show the items and the coins as analytical as possible. This will be interesting for collectors and people who know about coins and want to see what they look like, and it could also be interesting in connection with selling coins, for instance, on the web and wanting to document what you have. So generally, this kind of documentation requires a flat and even light and not too much creativity. What you want is you want to catalog the coins, and you want to make it easy for people to see what they look like. You could also put in close-ups of flaws in the coins and particular details that you want to enhance. So that's one way of shooting coins. We could also shoot coins as illustrations, where we would like each coin to be shown in a more creative or even beautiful way. this is where the real fun starts, if you ask me, and you coin collectors will have to pardon me here. You can set creative light, you can have fun with angles, you can have colors, you can have light in different sources, and you can play around with shadows and shiny surfaces. There's a lot of challenges there. You could also shoot the concept of coins or the concept of money, and that means playing with several coins, maybe stack them and pile them in different ways, and again we have the liberty to play with light and angles and all kinds of creativity. And you can take this one step further and try to illustrate the concept of business or prosperity and richness, combining coins with notes, paper money, papers, calculators, old business paraphernalia, and then you suddenly have a whole world unto itself. And all this can take place right on the top of your table. Hoo-ha! In order to build a desktop studio, I've used a cardboard box before, as you've seen and heard about in one of the earlier podcasts. I just cut away the sides and the tops and replaced it with opaque paper, kind of tissue paper. But this time we're going to be a bit more sophisticated. I've been to the local supermarket and bought myself a big plastic, white opaque plastic box. In my supermarket they go under the name of bed rollers because they roll under the bed. And this bed roller is quite deep. It's about like 30, 40 centimeters, or maybe, 10, 12, 15 inches or something like that. It's quite big. It's easy to work inside and has the right color so that I can set light on the outside and have it softened. I'll make sure that you get a picture of the box so you can see it. This is a very easy and cheap way of getting a desktop studio with a very even light. I've also been out to the local hobby store and bought myself a bunch of paper in different colors, and that I can use as a background. I can make these infinite soft backgrounds in different colors. I can set pieces of paper up as reflectors in different colors, and I can altogether use these white and different color sheets of paper as a creative source and as a background and what have you. So, and apart from that, I've bought some black tiles in the local builder's supply market, just plain black tiles, about, I don't know, 5 by 5 inches or something. These coins are not big, so I don't need that much surface. And these black tiles I'll show you how to use during this session. Apart from that, I have all the usual stuff, tape, some different things to support my subjects, and of course my flashes, a couple of SB800s, one will do in most cases, but I'll probably use two underway here, and also my D200 armed with the macro lens, but I will also cover other ways of getting macro on your camera. One of the things that I will cover is a ring that inverses the lenses on the camera. Another thing is magnifying lenses that you can screw in the front of any lens and get magnification in some way. But okay, on to the photography. For my first picture here, I have made a very, very simple setup. I've just put the white box on top of a support on the top of my dining table, actually, which is a mess right now because I'm getting together my papers for my little business here and making them ready for the accountant, but that's a different thing. So I've just pushed those papers aside and put my small new plastic studio on top of the table. Inside that I've put a black tile. I've supported it a bit so that it's at an angle, and that's just put on top of a small cardboard box so that I just get some height in there. I've set up one single flash to the right of the box, just pointing right down on the white box, on the outside of the white box, and that flash has been set up to become a slave to my D200, which has been set up to command mode. If you don't have a flash that can do this trick, the intelligent control of external flashes, you can either go for a cable that connects the flash to the camera, or you can use a slave. SB800 actually has a mode built in where it acts as an optical slave to any flash, which could be your flash on your camera, or a flash mounted on your camera, and then you would have to just control the flash manually, or you could use some kind of TTL measurement depending on which camera and flash you have. But I'm lucky I have the D200 and the SB800. That means that I don't have to worry much about exposure. I just set up the flash and I can basically just fire away. As I said, I have a macro on my camera, 90mm f2.8. I've stopped it down to about f11 or f10 or something like that, and I'm shooting handheld here because of the flash. It's quite easy to hold the thing still. You don't have to worry much about shake. The only thing you have to worry about is focus, and actually that can be easier to do handheld than in many other ways. Of course, you could mount the camera on a tripod, and I have done that on occasion when I'm shooting small things. That means that you're at liberty to use your hands to arrange the things in the small tabletop studio, but it also means that you're not quite free to move around and get creative as you please. My first picture here has just been a simple coin. I've mounted it on a small gob of something that we refer to as elephant snot. It's kind of a sticky gum that's not real sticky, but just enough sticky so that it sits on the tile and on the coin and can keep the coin at an angle. And that's a really convenient thing to have when you're fooling around with small things like that. You can probably find that in any hobby shop. It's often used to put things on walls or on boards temporarily because it sticks, but can be peeled off easily. You could also use tape and different other things, clay even, whatever you have and whatever you would find convenient. But in my case, I just stuck it on this gob of sticky gum and put the coin on the tile. It kind of floats now over the tile at an angle, and that gave me the first few pictures, which actually came out quite nice. I'm already, as you can hear, venturing into the more creative part of shooting coins, but I will of course just return to the more documentary way of doing things, and I will set up my my little studio to be ready for that now. Depending on what you want your coin to look like when you document it, you can do different things. But one main thing that I think that most coin collectors will emphasize is probably that you want to see the coin head-on, meaning that you want to see the backside and the front side of the coin at a perpendicular angle. And that means when taking pictures that you either have to mount the coin in an angle so that your camera can point to it horizontally or close to horizontal, or you want to put your coin on a table, flat on a table, and have your camera hovering over the coin in some way on a tripod or something like that. Since I have decided to use my small Lightbox home studio plastic box here, I've simply put a piece of paper, white paper, inside the plastic box. It sits in there snugly so that it won't slip or slide or anything. And that paper forms a nice arc in the background, a very soft, shadowless surface. And then I've taken my coin and just put it on a very small piece of this sticky gum so that it could sit anywhere on the paper, and just stuck it on the paper at a proper angle in a place where you can get the camera to point at it at the right angle. And that has taken care of my getting perpendicular to the coin. The next thing that I want to do is then get some very even light on the coin, almost shadowless, but then again, I still want to be able to see what's on the coin and see the print on the coin and the shape of whatever letters and other illustrations that you find on the coin. And in order to get that, I have put my flash over the camera, but shining through the small white box so that I get a very even light. I have taken a whole series of pictures where I have moved the flash around to get different other light effects, depending on what you want and what you find, and maybe even depending on what the coin is like. Some coins are very shiny, some are silvery, some are very dull, and you'll probably have to try different angles with the flash and different positions with the flash in order to get the right light for every single coin. You could also make a permanent setup where you just have the same light for every single coin. And as John mentioned in his feedback, he used a ring light, which gives an extremely even light. It's basically a light that sits around the lens and shines at small objects from all angles, and it's almost shadowless. But on the other hand, it's also very dull and flat, which can be both good and bad. It's an extremely documentary light, if you want to use that term, and that means that you won't get any real character in the subject that you shoot. Or rather, it means that you will get the very typical ring flash or ring light character in the subject that you use. Because actually, ring lights are very popular with, for instance, glamour or fashion photographers, because it gives this very particular kind of harsh light. So it does have character, but it's just a very, very particular character. The only really, really big problem with ring lights and coins is, of course, that most coins are shiny, and that means that the ring light sitting right around the lens will shine right back into the lens, and you will get reflections. So unless you're careful about that, you'll get a flat light that reflects right in the coin. It can be good, but it can also be a bit of a problem. I've fooled around with a single flash here and just tried to get some, as I said, different light, and that's in essence what I would suggest that you do if you want to document coins. You can make a flexible setup and just start experimenting, and as soon as you've found something that works with most coins, you can make that a permanent setup with a flash on a clamp or a small tripod or something like that, and your camera on a tripod in the same position with the same lens and the same settings every time. And once you've done that, you can actually clamp the whole thing down and just put the coins in front of the camera and press the shutter, and then you can really get a lot of coins through the machine during a very short time, because you have the whole thing set up and you know that it will work. But in my case, not being a coin collector or a coin photographer, I just tried to get different perspectives on this coin that I've selected to take pictures of. And actually, I took one of the most boring ones, and I took the side of the coin that I found was the most boring, and just tried to get that to light up in different ways, and making myself able to see what was on the coin in the best possible way. Oh, I've just taken a long stint here with a lot of different creative ways of shooting coins, and had some fun with one and two flashes, and using a snoot on one of the flashes. Coins and a snude is a very good combination if you want to get creative, because you can really confine the light to a very narrow, small ray. A snude is essentially just a tube that you put on your flash. I'll make sure that you get pictures of mine and see how it's made. It's simply a piece of gray foam which I've wrapped around a bunch of straws, black straws. And this combination sits snugly on the head of one of the SB800s and creates a very narrow and very directed source of light. And using that, I can shine light on small subjects and small parts of subjects without shining any light on the surroundings. And in combination with a second flash that can light up the surroundings, I can get some really neat effects. But actually, I think the best effect that I get with the snood is actually when I use that only and just get this really directional light, like a spotlight on a scene, if you can imagine that. And combined with the black tile and the shiny surface of the tile and the coins, I can get some really, really nice effects. Again, I've just been trying all kinds of positions with the flash and the camera and turning the coin and putting it upside standing it up on one edge with a bit of this sticky gum, and altogether I've tried all kinds of directions and all kinds of light and backgrounds and different colors and what have you, and I'm sure I'll get some really nice pictures out of that. It's a very easy way of creating some really different light, something that you cannot obtain in other ways. And all these shots have been shot with my 90mm macro, and I'm now going to turn to something that is quite different. This is a small thing that you can buy actually very, very cheaply. It's a very inexpensive piece of equipment which can really open the world to macro. What you need is an inversion or inverter ring for your lenses. What you get is a piece of metal which in one end has a socket or a bayonet for your camera, and in the other end has a filter thread which you screw into the front end of your lenses. So what you need to get is a ring that fits Nikon and that fits as many as of your lenses as possible. The lenses that you want to focus on in this case is actually from about normal lenses, that means 50mm, and then towards the wide end, because that will give you the best enlargement. So you want to aim for filter threads that will fit your 50mm, your 35mm, your 28mm, 24mm, whatever you have. The easiest lenses to use in this case are actually prime lenses, meaning lenses with just one focal length. And one nice thing about this is that you can actually use old lenses too, and you can even use non-brand lenses, meaning non-Nikon lenses. So whatever you can get your hands on will actually turn into a magnificent macro lens when you use this turning ring that turns around the lens in your on your camera. And of course you lose everything. You lose the ability to autofocus, you lose the ability to use the aperture properly, you have to stop down manually, and everything gets very odd, and the lenses on the camera mounted back ways. But what you get from the whole setup is that you get the ability to go extremely close, especially if you have wide angle lenses. And these close-ups can give some amazing effects. You need, like in most other cases when it comes to macro, you need a lot of light, and the flashes are the perfect way of getting that light. You could of course also use a permanent light from a lamp, and then long shutter speeds. I have used quite a lot cheap, inexpensive 12-volt lamps. I bought 3 of them at one point and use them quite a lot. The only disadvantage about them is that they get extremely hot, but they do emit a lot of light. And I just taped some weave, some glass weave in front of them to soften the light, and I've used them quite extensively for my macro photography. They work quite well, and as I said, inexpensive and give a lot of light. But I definitely find that if you have the money, you should spend a bit on a good flash or two and use that instead, because it does give you some advantages, both the very intense light, but also the ability to freeze things. And of course, the flashes are very useful in many other situations, and macro too. This macro reverse ring really requires a steady hand. The magnification is really huge and the depth of field is extremely shallow, so you need good support in order to be able to shoot with that. But I think I managed to get a few shots in the box here with this extreme close-up setup. When you take a picture of a coin like I did, you can't even get the whole coin in the picture, so I fooled around with the edges of some coins and a hole in the middle of one of the coins and different other small details and tried to get some really extreme close-ups, and I'm sure that worked quite well. And as a finale here, I just had my flashes really close to the coins and took some pictures with reflections in the black tile and just a bunch of coins in a whole mess, and some of them came out quite nice too. I returned to the macro because the extreme close-up was really quite straining, actually holding the camera still and getting close enough. And also the camera is able to determine the exposure and set the flashes right, but you have to stop down manually, and when you stop down manually, it actually does stop down as soon as you start turning the lens or turning the aperture ring on the lens, and that means that the picture gets darker in the lens. It also means, of course, for those of you not familiar with the Nikon system in detail, that you have to use a lens that is able to stop down manually, meaning that it does have to have an aperture ring, and only the older lenses and a few of the newer ones have that. All the lenses that Nikon designate G do not have this ability to stop down manually, and that means that the reverse ring won't be of much use with those, because they will always be set at the maximum aperture and be very, very dark. But the ring is a nice toy and a very cheap toy. And if you put it on a tripod, put your camera on a tripod with the reverse ring on and use a focus rail or something like that, you can actually use it to get some extreme close-up details of small parts of, for instance, electronics and, in this case, coins. And in my case, being a fly fisherman of artificial flies and hooks for fly fishing, and that's quite useful actually, and it's a cheap way of getting extremely close. Well, having shot all these macro images, I'm actually quite sore in the back now. One disadvantage of doing all this macro work is that you have to kind of crouch over the camera all the time and get really close. And of course, you can do a lot with an angle finder and a tripod, but if you want to be a bit creative and hold the camera in your hand, you need to hold all that weight and just get down a bit. Even though I had put my small tabletop studio on a box here and had it quite high, I'm still quite aching in the back. So I think I'll call it a day with the macro photography and the coin photography and start working on the pictures and get this podcast ready for you. I was just reminded to remind you of one of the Nikonians activities that has become a really huge success, namely the Nikonians Academy workshops. And There's one in particular which seems very interesting. My fellow podcasters, Rick Walker and Jason O'Dell, are joining Mike Hagen in a workflow and inkjet printing workshop, which is a 4-day event that you can participate in. And that seems to be a really, really interesting event, if you ask me. Something that I at least would love to join, but unfortunately something that takes place in the US only as it is right now. So for those of you who want to get into workflow and digital printing and want to meet Rick and Jason as well as Mike, you should log into the Nikonians Academy, which is nikoniansacademy.com, and seek out the Advanced Digital Imaging Workflow workshop and see what that is. There's actually a $100 rebate if you sign up early, and that seems quite interesting, if you ask me. Okay, I think I will call this a day, and hope you enjoyed listening, and I will be back next week with a new podcast, hopefully being able to be outdoors. I'm looking out my windows now, and the snow is just howling vertically and horizontally and in every odd direction in high-speed winds, and I'm really glad that I decided to stay indoors and just do some coin photography. As usual, you're welcome to give me some feedback in the podcast's feedback forum, and of course you can also drop me an email, and the address is onlocation@nikonians.org. So, as I said, give me some feedback, drop me a mail, whatever, and I'll see you next week. Until then, remember to shoot all the pictures you can, and take care. Goodbye.